This is a recording of ISIS International from the Global NGO Forum on Beijing Plus 15, held in New York in February 2010.
ISIS International, documenting feminist visions, creating critical communications, and strengthening social movements.
I'm going to focus today on the economic crisis. And in the program, it says that I'm from India, and I was born in India. But as you can tell from my very Midwestern accent, I've spent quite a bit of time in the United States. And so I'm going to speak about the United States today and the crisis here and not about India. One of the things that this economic crisis in particular, and there have been many around the world, has let us understand is that the kind of economic policy that we've followed in the world for the last three decades has not worked. The idea that economic growth as the one and only mandate for economic policy has shown us that inequality in the world has grown. More and more people are poor, the rich are incredibly rich, and the world over is suffering from this neoliberal economic policy. So I think given what the world looks like right now, and given the crisis that we're all dealing with around the world, it's time for us, I think, as women's movements and feminists, to really start questioning the underlying problems with the kind of economic system we live in. And we need to do that from not just looking at the impact it's had on women, but to really look at the entire system as a whole, and how do we assess the macroeconomic policies that have been guiding our world for the last 30 years. One such attempt that I've been working on, and I know there are many other attempts, so I'm just giving an example of one, is to use human rights and the work of human rights norms and standards that exist and signed on by governments, not only to look at the violations that occur after a crisis or because people have been neglected from government policy, but to use the norms and standards of human rights to assess macroeconomic policy as a whole. So what I'm going to do is really give you a couple of examples of how we can use this, and I'm going to give you those examples from the United States, but I think they're applicable to all parts of the world in terms of how we can use human rights as an ethical lens to evaluate economic policy. I mean, before the Cold War, you sort of had, you know, socialism and capitalism, and there was sort of a dual fight over which kind of economic policy is better. At this point, we're stuck with the system that we have, and I think we need to rethink, how do we assess this policy? What is the economy for, right? And obviously, this economy is not working for the majority of the people of the world. So how do we make it do that? So using a human rights lens, and especially using the Covenant on Economic and Social Rights, the guidelines, the master guidelines that were developed as a part of the elaboration of the Covenant, asked for specific obligations of the state. And what it asked for is that the state has an obligation to respect, protect, and fulfill economic and social rights. So what does it mean when you say that the state has an obligation to respect, protect, and fulfill? I will look, in the few minutes that I have here, only at the obligation to protect, and say that this crisis that has taken place, starting in the United States and has had global ramifications, was a failure on the part of the state to protect. Media talks about the crisis, it's as though the sort of skies opened up and a crisis happened. It isn't. It was a manufactured crisis. And it was a manufactured crisis because of the state's failure to protect. The crisis was manufactured, for example, because there was a change in the regulatory policies that the state had that allowed for these kind of crazy financial investments that have taken place. Rather than the state looking out for the interests of working families, women, single mothers, what we have is the state falling into the pockets of financial institutions and the banking industry. There was a recent study done by the International Monetary Fund, I repeat, the International Monetary Fund, that said that the amount of money that has gone for political purposes in the United States, the institutions and banking industry that gave the most amount of money to government policymakers, senators and all of that, had the highest rate of high-risk behavior. So there was a direct correlation between the amount of money that went to politicians and the high-risk behavior of institutions. So what I would say is that somebody has captured the state, and we need to recapture the interests of the state for our good and not theirs. In particular, for the United States, we had, in 1999, the Financial Services Modernization Act. This was done under the auspices of Larry Summers, who is now again in charge of economic policy in the United States, and under Bill Clinton, where basically it got rid of what was called the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act was put into place after the Great Depression to separate out financial institutions from the banking industry so that risky behavior doesn't happen. Well, Larry Summers and a few other four men, really, got together in a room and they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. And the reason for this entire chaos was that that policy that kind of separated out what the banking industry could do and what the financial sector could do was taken away. Now, why was it taken away? So that Citibank could become Citigroup. And so, because of that one repeal and many others, I mean, the bias regulation that has taken place over the last last 20 years, but in particular the last 10 years, that created this mess is something that we need to hold the government accountable to. And I want to give one more example about, and also the government did not do anything to protect people from the predatory lending practices of these commercial banks. But there's one example that I want to give that when I read this and sort of discovered these numbers, I was blown away. There's a certain amount of money that banks keep in their assets, right? It's the kind of money that you keep in order to have enough to loan out. There's all technical names, but basically there's a certain amount of money that banks keep in their coffers. Now, in 2007, the average amount of money that the banks kept, all commercial banks kept, was about $29 billion, give or a few billion here and there. In December of 2009, the amount of money that banks were keeping was $729 billion. $700 billion, which was the TARP money that was given to banks, is sitting in their banks. The reason why there has been no lending of money is they're sitting on this money. Meanwhile, they're asking for bonuses for doing what? If you're a bank, you're supposed to be loaning money out. If you're sitting on it, you actually haven't done your job, but you still want bonuses. They're sitting on that money. And why are they sitting on the money? Because they say they're toxic assets and there are too many things that they don't understand. What the government has done is it's privatized profit and it has socialized risk. We are in risk for reparations. Lastly, I want to say that I focus on the United States, but these policies are being perpetuated by the international financial institutions. So countries who are suffering balance of payments crisis because of the crisis that was started in the United States have to go to the IMF to borrow money. Unlike the United States, where everyone wants to lend money to the US so that we can keep buying everyone's stuff, the other countries have to go to the IMF to borrow money. Well, when they go to the IMF, what is the IMF still asking them to do? Liberalize their financial sector. Now, we know that the liberalization of the financial sector is what caused this problem. And so other countries cannot sort of protect their own financial sector from the kind of predatory practices that were taking place. I'm sure you're all paying attention to the news in terms of what's happening in Greece. They're betting against Greece's debt, right? I mean, this betting, this gambling of our lives has got to end. So I will stop by saying that what we need to do as the women's movement, as feminists, is to really take back the seat. It's ours, and we need to make them do what we need.
This speech was brought to you by ISIS International. For more audio reports, please tune into the ISIS website at www.isisinternational.org.